Hey, everybody, this is Alan Tudyk, and this week, Geek... What is it? Hello, everybody, this is Alan Tudyk, and this week in Geek.net, you may know me from Firefly, or Con Man, out on Vimeo. Check it out.
Hey, guys, what's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geek's Nerd News Network. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dunn. Today is Saturday, October 17th, 2015. Yeah, I realize the show's a day late, but I actually have a good reason for that, which I'm actually going to get into right now. So anyway, guys, currently I'm working on my review for Halo 5 Guardians. That's right, I received my code middle of yesterday, and I have beaten the game. So I was up for a vast majority of the night playing the game, hence why I wanted to try and get that done before I went into Nerd News this week. So now I am under embargo until basically next Monday, until like 3 a.m. Eastern time. But I am allowed to do a little bit of campaign preview. I can talk about the first three missions and then the eighth mission, which is called Swords of St. Helios. My impressions from playing Halo 5 Guardians so far, spoilers, I guess I'm supposed to say that, it picks up, obviously picks up after Halo 4, Spartan Locke and Fireteam Osiris. Well, they're going after the Master Chief, because obviously he's received a mysterious message, and he's sort of, as they say, gone off the reservation. To go after this and try and get some real answers as to what the hell's going on. You do go across a couple different planets in UNSC space. You very much find out what's going on with the Covenant, which is actually kind of awesome. It does wrap up a lot of plot threads that were left from Spartan Ops, which was from Halo 4. And it does ask a bunch of new questions. I'm actually very happy how things all come together, especially... seeing the elite homeworld in the Swords of St. Helios, which is what the elite homeworld is called. So, yeah, I'm actually very impressed. But to talk about it from a gameplay perspective, it's the gameplay, the gunplay seemed a lot smoother in some ways. Although I do find out in a lot of places, I'm forced to rely on a lot of scavenged weaponry. I don't get to use as much UNSC stuff as I like, but I've always preferred human weapons over Covenant or Promethean. Although the scattershot is still pretty badass, and I do like some of the changes they've made to the weapons. I haven't fell in love with any of the new ones yet. One of the guns I got to play in the campaign preview, I went at a Microsoft event about a month and a half ago, was the Hydra Missile Launcher, which is this sort of like rapid-fire missile launcher that can lock on the people. It's okay. Honestly, I found myself using the suppressor a lot from the Prometheans and the scatter shot and the storm rifle and the carbine. I've always used the carbine from the Covenant. It's just one of my favorite guns. I like what they've done with the DMR on the UNSC side, and I really like the sound effect on the new assault rifle, which is pretty cool. And same with the battle rifle. I like everything that I've played with so far. Storyline-wise, like I said, I really wish I could tell you more, but I will tell you more when embargo lifts, though I'm not allowed to spoil it because, you know, the game's not out yet, and people would probably kick down my door and punch me in the face. Multiplayer will not be available for me up until probably late next week. It's just the way things are right now. They want us to focus on the campaign. So hopefully me and Jamie will have some pretty good multiplayer experiences to share with you. So as of right now, it's just us journalists out there, and the multiplayer is not active for us. But hopefully we'll have some stuff. We'll try and stream some stuff on Twitch. I think that's the idea anyway. So what are we going to be talking about this week on the show? Well, I'm actually going to give you a review of the Shout Factory release of Hackers for the 20th anniversary edition that came out, and I think towards the end of August. We're also going to talk about a very big discovery in space, which sort of leads into what I was talking about previously. Have we actually discovered Halo? A real legitimate Halo? We're also going to be talking about Nintendo's new hardware, the NX. Also, we're going to talk about the UN has set up a panel to talk about the dangers of artificial intelligence. And finally, we're also going to comment on one of the biggest confirmations of the year, I think, for Thor Ragnarok, and who's going to be joining the God of Thunder, kicking the crap out of Asgard. Okay, so the big elephant in the room that I was just talking about is earlier this week, star KIC8462852, pretty sure I got that right, has something weird circling around it. This star is located just under 1,500 light years away, and they don't know what it is, and it's probably not natural. Here's what I mean by that. So the Kepler Space Telescope, which unfortunately was damaged back in 2013, was compiling data, and they've had this data obviously for a couple years and cross-referencing it and checking it again, blah blah blah. So how the Kepler telescope discovered planets is it would watch a star and look for little dips in light, basically when the planet was crossing in front of the star. Light would dip by 1, maybe 2%. And that's how they could say, oh, it's completed its yearly orbit, blah, 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 cool. We now know what is going on. Neat. Now, this object has dips as high as 20% in front of its star. That's weird. And they don't think it's a cloud of dust or rocks, because these are only around very young stars. This star is in its main sequence, which means it's kind of like ours. So they don't know what this is. Now, there's a few other explanations for this, like perhaps a wandering star had pulled in comets, but they say that's probably a bit of a stretch. They don't know what this thing is, and one of the possibilities that has popped up is this could be alien architecture. And I know that sounds weird, but hear me out. One of the things that's been talked about, it's a theory that a sufficiently advanced civilization could create something called a Dyson Sphere. A Dyson Sphere is basically a huge collection of solar panels, which would provide that civilization with a shit ton of power, and it could be a way to signal other intelligent life that, hey, we're out here. And it's the theory is kind of gaining a lot of traction right now, because people are starting to kind of think about it. Like, well, when you eliminate the possible, you have to start considering the impossible. Now, scientists are not saying that it's aliens, straight out. They're, like, saying, we don't know. But you may want to consider it. And I do find that, I guess here's the conspiratorial part of me. When you have to consider how much in the last couple of years we're starting to talk about the possibility of life on other worlds as a little bit more than just a science fiction story, I kind of wonder if the public is being drip-fed just enough to start getting people ready for this. Because are we going to announce the finding of intelligent life? I don't think the public's going to be ready for that for quite some time. But microbial life and really simple life? Yeah, I could totally buy that. So short of the aliens showing up on the front lawn of, say, Parliament Hill or the White House, you know, that's pretty much NASA and other space organizations are going to be the ones to eventually kind of tell us this, what's going on. But just the fact that we're even talking about this, and a lot of websites and a lot of newspapers are actually starting to talk about it, fairly credible ones too. The place I'm reading this article comes from popularscience.com. I've seen the Washington Times talk about this. I think the Toronto Stars talked about it. So a lot of credible newspapers and other media sources are talking about it. And I guess, how would that change your perception of the universe to know we are not alone? Now, there is something called the Drake Equation, which kind of, I'm trying to think, to estimate the number of intelligent civilizations in our galaxy. And the formula equals this, N equals R. R stands for the average rate of formation of stars that are suitable for life. F, the fraction of those stars that have planets, fraction of those have planets with an environment suitable for life, fraction of those planets where life actually appears, fraction of those planets that have evolved to be intelligent, fraction of those planets with intelligent life that develop technologies to release detectable signals in the space, and finally, the length of time those signals are released. Now, obviously, a lot of these things cannot be filled in because we simply don't know. However, the Kepler telescope has discovered more than 1,000 planets around stars. And scientists calculate there are probably billions of planets in our galaxy. So even if intelligent life is super friggin' rare, the possibility of worlds out there with other life on them is pretty good, all things considered. So, I don't know. I do find this incredibly interesting. And especially since I just played Halo, wouldn't that be weird if we found Halo? God, I don't want that to happen, because if you know what Halo is, that is very, 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 very bad. Okay, so moving on to the next story. A report is coming out that Nintendo's next-gen platform, the NX, combines handheld and console in some way. Now, according to the Wall Street Journal, I'm actually going to read you a quote here. The exact shape of the NX hardware isn't clear yet. People familiar with the development plan said Nintendo would likely include both a console and at least one mobile unit that could be used in conjunction with the console or taken on the road for separate use. They've also said that Nintendo would aim to put industry-leading chips in the NX device after criticism that the Wii U's capabilities didn't match those of its competitors. Ha! Huh. Interesting. Interesting, interesting, interesting. Now, they do talk about having the consoles and the handhelds be connected in one way. And we've very much seen this happen recently. Because the Wii U could talk to your Nintendo 3DS to play Smash Brothers as a separate controller. And with Amiibo support available on both, I kind of wonder what's kind of going on with that. And I wonder whether they'll aim to integrate 3DS technology with the new console. It would make sense. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if there's going to be some kind of cross-compatibility there with the NX and the 3DS. Maybe the 3DS will double as a second controller, like, straight out, especially with the new 3DS currently available on the market. Because you have to remember, the DS's life cycle was ridiculously long. The 3DS has been around since, I think, 2011. So, yeah, the technology's getting a little long in the tooth, but the fact that they're able to keep innovating every couple years with it, I don't know. I would kind of wonder here. Now, the idea that it's going to be some kind of a console-handheld hybrid has been around for a while. I guess we're going to kind of have to wait and see what happens. Because if you look at the Wii U, it kind of was a step in the right direction. Because that pad, if it had internal memory and a good battery, you could play your Wii U games pretty much anywhere. Although, unfortunately, the wireless limits of that console prevented it. Because, for example, me and my wife Blair, we can't take our Wii U controller any further than maybe 10 feet, 15 feet from the TV just because of the amount of walls in our house. I'm not going to lie, it would be kind of cool to play Mario Brothers on the shitter, but hey, I'm not sure you want to bring your console into the toilet, but I know some of you do. So Nintendo has reached out and said they're not going to comment onto anything else on the NX until 2016. Which means that E3 this year, we're going to see something. For sure. I guess we're going to have to wait and see what happens. And considering the Wii U is kind of starting to wind down in terms of what it's actually doing, I mean, yeah, there's still a lot of really good first-party games for it, but you don't see a shit ton of third-party support, which is kind of unfortunate, because I thought the Wii U... I think it still does have a lot of potential, because one of the coolest games I played for it was Splinter Cell Blacklist. The fact that you can control your drone on the pad, I thought was incredibly awesome. And Splinter Cell Blacklist is just a damn good game. Go out and play it. So, I guess we'll just kind of have to wait and see what'll happen. And it's funny, Nintendo's late president, Satoru Iwata, said last year that the company was switching to an approach that used one OS for handheld and console devices, basically how iOS works across multiple Apple devices. I am reading part of this from a Kotaku article, that's why we're using a lot of similar wording. But from what I'm hearing, too, dev kits are going out, software dev kits anyway, to certain developers. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. I'm sure we'll get more news as the year goes on, and obviously before E3. There'll probably be one or two major leaks before then. So, yeah, looking forward to a new Nintendo console. Hopefully they'll send me this one, too. All right. So, AI, very good. Good AI. Cortana. I'm trying to think of other good AIs. I'm thinking here. Really, I am. Okay, well, we can think of a shit ton of bad ones. Skynet, the machines from the Matrix. The list goes on. Basically, things you don't want to fuck with. So, the UN has a committee that was organized by Georgia's UN representative. This committee, headed by Georgia's UN representatives and the UN Interregional Crime and Justice Research Institute, or UNICERI, set up this discussion to talk about national and international security risks posed by new tech. So that's chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear stuff. However, one of the things that was talked about at this thing was artificial superintelligence, or AI that can easily outpace humans or, you know, think basically beyond us and control certain things that we may not necessarily want to hand over the keys to the kind of kingdoms to. So two experts came out, Max Tegmark, and he's a physicist at MIT, and Nick Bostrom. He's the founder of Oxford's Future of Humanities Institute, and he also wrote the book Superintelligence, Past Dangers in Strategies. So both these guys came out and said, AI has the potential to transform human society in profoundly positive ways. But they also realized that this technology could quickly go out of control and turn against us. Now, it's funny because Stephen Hawking and other people have said bad things could very easily happen if we don't put control systems in place before we develop these technologies. Because if, let's say, we develop some supercomputer to fix an environmental problem, and that environmental problem decides, you know what would fix this? If all the humans were removed from the situation. Kind of like how Skynet decided, you know how to achieve world peace? Kill everybody. That would work. And it's not like the logic's wrong. So, one of the other things that was said during this is one can imagine such technology outsmarting financial markets, out-inventing human researchers, out-manipulating human leaders, and developing weapons we cannot even understand. Whereas the short-term impact of AI depends on who controls it, the long-term impact depends on whether it can be controlled at all. So Bostrom goes on to say, the control problem is absolutely critical. There are plausible scenarios in which superintelligent systems become very powerful. And there are these superficially plausible ways of solving the control problem. Ideas that immediately swing to people's minds upon closer examination turn out to fail. So there is currently open, unsolved problems on how to develop better control mechanisms. And that's going to be smart it's going to be difficult because we have to do this before we develop the super AI. So it's incredible to think about that we're actually starting to talk about this. We are entering literally that realm where science fiction is now becoming science fact, where you could have artificial intelligence that could control power systems, nuclear systems, communications, and probably even be part of the decision-making process for financial markets. Because I think right now, like, even certain loans are figured out by computers, and you call into a system and someone just enters the data and the system's like, oh, well, you're approved for X amount of this. So I'm not saying we've reached the singularity where, you know, I think I'm using that term correctly, where the machines say, hey, you know what? This sucks. I'm not saying artificial intelligence in terms of self-awareness, but even if the systems got sufficiently, quote-unquote, smart, eventually that decision-making just may just come out naturally. If they want to program these things to be a human, I think you kind of get where I'm going with this. So, yeah, isn't that wonderful news for you this week? We discover Halo and but the possibility of fucking Skynet. Okay, so finally, at least in terms of stories, big rumor confirmation this week is looks like the Hulk is going to be joining Thor Ragnarok, and Mark Ruffalo is going to be joining the new movie, which is going to be kind of awesome. So, supposedly, the story is going to center on a quote-unquote distant planet that is not Asgard and not Earth. People are kind of starting to wonder if this will be like Planet Hulk-ish. And this is supposed to close out the MCU's Asgardian trilogy, which was Thor the Dark World and the original Thor. So this will be kind of neat, just to, especially to see how they kind of wrap up the loose plot lines, especially since Loki has been posing as Odin. And I don't know whether Odin's dead or what. So, I don't know. It'll be cool just to see these two get to be all kind of bromancy, especially because Banner's all smart and kind of vulnerable. And, you know, Thor, I wouldn't call him a kind of careless, but I'd call him almost borderline arrogant. So, I guess we're going to have to wait and see what happens with this. I'm definitely looking forward to this. Now, this is supposed to be released in 2017, November 3rd. So, looking forward to seeing how this ties into the rest of Marvel's Phase 3 plans. So, I love Mark Ruffalo. I think he's the best, one of the best things to happen to the MCU. Nothing against Edward Norton's portrayal of the Hulk in the first movie, but I think more people might have seen that movie had it been, you know, Mark Ruffalo in that role and maybe tweak a few things around. So, you know what? I really can't even picture the other Avengers movies with without Mark Ruffalo. I can't picture Edward Norton chilling with the Avengers on Avengers Tower. It just doesn't seem like something Ed Norton would do. So I'm glad we got Mark Ruffalo when we did. So yay, fun. Okay, so finally, we're going to talk about a movie that I got a little while ago. And this is Hackers, the 20th anniversary edition from Shout Factory. So, obviously this movie's been around for quite some time. There have been multiple releases of it, and this was, I think this is the first time the movie's been on Blu-ray. So you get a single disc, and you get one special feature, which is just over an hour. And it's new interviews with the director, Ian Softley. You get interviews with Matthew Lillard, Penn Jillette, Fisher Stevens, but you also talk with some of the visual effects artists, such as Peter, I can't even pronounce his last name, wardrobe designer Roger Burton. You also talk with some of the hacker consultants, such as Emmanuel Goldstein. He was one of the big guys behind 2600 Magazine, one of the original hackers. Another guy who's very much based on the Jesse Bradford character in the movie, Joey, and film critic Mark Kermode. And it's really interesting. In fact, all those scenes you see of them flying through the city, where it's like the pillars of light and text, yeah, that's a practical model. And then they just animated over it, which is kind of neat. And there's one scene they talk about for like 2 or 3 minutes where you see Fisher Stevens on the skateboard as the plague coming down the hall to visit Penn Jillette. And just a lot more effort went into that scene than I realized. And watching it again, I realized how much I really and genuinely enjoy that shot. Just the music, the lighting. And that's another thing, too. You also pay attention to the lighting in this movie by going through some of the interviews. They're like, take a look at this, take a look at this. And you just realized how ahead of this time this movie was. Because when this movie came out in 1995, people were like, oh, that's ridiculous. That'll never happen. Yeah. Let me see. Hackers going into computer systems and getting information and giving it out for free. Edward Snowden, stuff like that. Hacktivism is a big thing right now. Hell, I think it was, like, I can't remember when this happened, but I know some hackers broke into, like, Iran or Iraq's nuclear program and played Thunderstruck over their computers. So, figure that one out. So, is this release worth it? Well, the documentary, like I said, it's about an hour, done by Shout Factory's Brian Ward. Absolutely. Like I said, there's a lot of really cool info in there, and I'm really glad that I watched it. Now, this is not an upscale, so that's very nice to know. Now, the sound on this disc is supposed to be a DTS 2.0, which is digital stereo. Now, there seems to be some debate. If you go to Shout Factory's page, there's talk in the comments that this was, now there was an original 5.1 transfer. Now, I have this on DVD, and supposedly that 5.1 is faked. Like, it's a slight bit of reverb and a bit of delay on certain things. I did watch this on a stereo TV, and it sounded fine to me, because I watched this in my bedroom yesterday. And if you talk about, and if you read some of the comments there, certain theaters had this, because when this movie came out back in 1995, not every theater was doing digital stuff yet. So it doesn't sound impossible that, because this movie was from MGM and United Artists, that when they went to master this like DVD again, it's possible some of those elements could be missing because they just may have simply gotten lost over the years. Like these DTS discs that have the proper 5.1 soundtrack on it, they may not have them in archives anymore. And there's one guy in the comments talking about, well, I still have it. I'm like, well, But still, though, the sound of this movie is fantastic. In fact, this is one of the first soundtracks I actively went out and sought. And there were three volumes of music from and inspired by this. And the Hackers movie itself has always been a very big inspiration to me in how I've approached that kind of counterculture, keeping an interest in technology. While I've never been more than a script kiddie, it's kind of cool to know just that there was a time when intelligence like this was thought as dangerous and all that shit. So can or should you pick this up on Blu-ray? Well, for $20, I can't see you really going wrong with that. It's a great looking transfer. The soundtrack is amazing. This movie launched the careers of Johnny Lee Miller and Angelina Jolie. Turns out these guys are married for a little while. They divorced, but they're still evidently quite close friends. And we've seen how both their careers have gone. Johnny Lee Miller stars in Elementary. Angelina Jolie has adopted 90% of Africa. And she was Tomb Raider. So, you know what? I'm willing to let that go. That's pretty much going to do it for this edition of the Nerd News Network. I will talk about Halo 5 next week. When I can. I'm hopefully going to stream some of this. I also got Assassin's Creed Syndicate, which I'm probably going to dig into in the next 15-20 minutes. So anyway, until next time, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, live free or die hard. And I'll catch you guys again next week, right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net's Nerd News Network.
Wanna see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my god, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub. And I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? That 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
You guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico.
Holy shit. Oh, my gosh. Freak. Die. Holy crap. Whoa. Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are
you?
Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content. As well, subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by @replying to @thisweekingeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at PronoBozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.